Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
Begin there in just a moment as we continue our journey through the life of Abraham. It is good to see everyone here this evening, and just to reiterate a couple of the announcements for things that we have coming up. Don't forget about the sign-up sheets that are there for our egg hunt, as well as the opportunity to bring some candy and some plastic eggs and to help out in other ways. We will have more than just the egg hunt itself. There will be some games. There will be activities for the kids to be part of. And so if you can help with that in any way, we'd love for you to be part of that. Also, I'll make this announcement just a couple more times, but we have our sign-up sheets. If you'd like to volunteer to be a part of our marriage mentoring program, either to be a couple that is sharing some experience and insight, or to be a couple that's gaining from that insight, both of those sign-up sheets are there, and we have plenty of room to be involved. I think one thing that will come out of this will be that there'll be some friendships formed. And just imagine what a great opportunity that is in a congregation the size of ours to be able to spend some time with people that you might not have gotten to know very well and make those kinds of connections. That's such an important thing. And so if you can be a part of that, we'd encourage you to do that, and you can sign up for that the rest of this month. One of the newer songs that we've been learning over the last year or two is this one. This is probably one of my favorites of the ones that we've learned. And so let's sing all verses together of How Deep the Father's Love for Us.
How deep the Father's love for us, how vast beyond all measure, that He should give His only Son to make a wretch His treasure. How great the pain of searing loss, the Father turns His face away, as wounds which mar the chosen one bring many sons to glory. Behold the man upon the cross, my sin upon His shoulders. Ashamed I hear my mocking voice call out among the scoffers. It was my sin that held Him there until it was accomplished. His dying breath has brought me life. I know that it is finished. I will not boast in anything, no gifts, no power, no wisdom, but I will boast in Jesus Christ, His death and resurrection. Why should I gain from His reward? I cannot give an answer, but this I know with all my heart, His wounds have paid my ransom. Amen.
As we come to Genesis chapter 18, we've come to part of Abraham's life where a significant amount of time has elapsed. And as we've gone through Abraham's life, we've skipped over some of the parts where God reaffirms the covenant with Abraham. And in a few weeks, we'll go over all of those in one lesson, just to see the progression of God continuing to not only reaffirm the covenant, but also each time give some added details and expand the scope of what He tells Abraham. But when we see this scene in Genesis chapter 18, we see something that's really an incredible opportunity that both Abraham and Sarah are given. And as we do that, I want us to stop for just a moment and think about a principle in life that I've found to be true no matter what the situation is, no matter what's happened. If you are somewhere and something happens that's funny and you shouldn't be laughing out loud, the thing that happened that was funny just keeps getting funnier. Have you noticed that? When you can't laugh out loud, when you should just be sitting there quietly and something funny happens, it makes it that much funnier. And the harder you try not to laugh and not to think about it, the harder it is not to laugh and not to think about it. And it's all you can. And even something that's small and wasn't really that funny to begin with becomes hilarious. And you try to tell people about it afterwards, and it's not all that funny. But in the moment, when you couldn't laugh, when you were trying to hold it in, it became very difficult. I shared this story with some of you, but I guess it's been almost a year and a half or so ago when I went to make a hospital visit. I was going to see Wendell when he was in the hospital, and I thought I'd really cheer him up because I brought this little dog that it's kind of a, looks like a stuffed dog, but it's got a battery inside, and this dog laughs. And it's a hilarious little thing, and I knew about it because it had been very entertaining for my sons. They loved it when they'd come visit the office. You know, they'd love seeing this dog that laughed, and so I thought, well, this will be funny, and it'll cheer Wendell up. And so I got into his office. I had connections with people who had keys to Wendell's office, so I got in and got that little dog, and I was going to take it to him, and it has a motion sensor on it. And so we were joking about it, and I said, yeah, you ought to just put this right here so when a nurse walks into the hospital room, you know, this dog will start laughing, and it'll be a big joke, and we laughed about that, and wouldn't that be funny? And then it came time for the end of the visit, and I stood up to lead a prayer. And you guessed it, I had not turned the dog off. So as I stood up to lead a prayer and began that prayer, this dog starts laughing hysterically on the ground, and it starts rolling around, and I didn't think that the laughter lasted that long until I tried to pause and wait for it. And that thing laughs for, it seemed like 5 minutes, you know. So we were just standing there waiting, and finally we had to just go ahead and go through with it. But it's one of those situations that you were trying not to laugh and you were trying to stay focused, but it was really hard. And I think we can relate to that, to times you can probably remember in your mind, times when you've tried not to laugh at something, but it was just so funny. Just we're trying hard not to, trying to hold it in. When we think about laughter, usually we're thinking of times that are pretty funny. Something humorous has happened. But it's interesting to see some laughter that takes place, not only here, but also later in Genesis. We'll look at laughter on the part of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And we find out that the thing about which she's laughing is really not a laughing matter. And it's not a laughing matter in a different sense than we might usually think of that phrase. We usually say something's not a laughing matter if someone's laughing about something that's serious, something that's important, something that shouldn't be comical. But I'd like for us to really dig into this chapter and see what it is about Sarah's response to this promise that's made that's not really a laughing matter. As we talked about Hagar last week in Genesis 16, in verse 13, she described God as a God who sees, because He saw her. And He came to her and gave her a message. This woman who had been a slave and now she had a child and she was in despair, but God came to her. And so she described Him as a God who sees. I think as we look through this chapter, we're going to learn a lot about God and the way He interacts with Abraham and Sarah. And in doing so, I think we'll learn a lot about how we see God interacting with Christians in the New Testament. The first thing we notice at the very beginning of this chapter is that Abraham and Sarah were serving a God who visits. A God who visits His people. That's what we see in the Old Testament. And after all, Abraham had already been visited by God before. He'd had several messages from God before. And during this era, that's how God was communicating to people, through the patriarchs, through the fathers. And so Abraham is receiving these messages, but this is a very unique visit. And so let's start reading in verse 1 of chapter 18. Now the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre while he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them, and he bowed himself to the earth and said, "My Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves. After that, you may go on since you have visited your servant." And they said, "So do as you have said." So Abraham hurried quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, "Quickly, prepare three measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes." Abraham also ran to the herd and took a tender and choice calf and gave it to the servant, and he hurried to prepare it. He took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them, and he was standing by them under the tree as they ate. Then they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "There, in the tent." Now we'll come back to that in just a moment. But I think it's fascinating to see this incredible opportunity that Abraham has been given. The very first verse of this chapter tells us that the Lord appeared to Abraham. And yet, when he lifts up his eyes in verse 2, we see that there are three men that come before him. Later on, we're going to find out the two of those that were there are angels. They go on to play part in the next chapter of Abraham's life that we see unfold in the rest of chapter 18. And yet we also know that the Lord was present there. Now it would be nice to have been able to see firsthand exactly how all this happened. But you know, there are multiple times in the Old Testament where there is an individual described as the angel of the Lord, a being described as the angel of the Lord. In fact, we saw some of that when God spoke to Hagar. And while angels don't accept worship, this angel of the Lord seems to accept that people communicate to the angel of the Lord as the Lord himself. In fact, that's how Hagar understood God's message. And so it seems here that God is here in the form of man. Now we know that happens in the New Testament. We know that the Word becomes flesh, and we know about Jesus walking on the earth. But it seems like we have that same thing happening here, that God is coming in the form of man. And so as we think about this series we had last year, as we went through angels, we talked about the idea that this angel of the Lord figure that we see in the Old Testament is really the Word, the pre-incarnate Word before coming to the earth as Jesus. That you have divinity that's present in the form of man. The Lord is there in the form of man. And so that's what's happening here. That we see God coming to Abraham and visiting him. And we see Abraham's hospitality. Now even today in Middle Eastern countries, hospitality is held in very high regard. We might have gone a little bit away from that in our culture, although I think Southern hospitality is pretty famous and well known. But I'll never forget a few years ago hearing an individual who had served over in the Nazareth area as a missionary for multiple years. Dr. Everett Hufford, who's the dean at Harding's School of Theology in Memphis, he described what it was like to adjust to some of their cultural norms that reflected hospitality. And so he had one of the neighbors that when they moved in came over and brought a very nice plate of bread. Again, that was in keeping with their culture, and she'd prepared it very nicely. When they were done eating it, they went over and returned the plate to her. And so a couple of days later, they got another plate with bread on it. And they, "This is nice." They ate the bread, returned the plate to her. A couple of days later, they got another plate with bread on it. Now, she had intended the plate to be part of this gift, but she was too kind to tell them that's what it was. So every time they handed it back, she just loaded it up with more bread and took it over there. And he said, finally, someone told them, "She's trying to give that to you." You know, and they understood and adjusted to some of those things. But hospitality was held in very high regard. And I like the way Genesis 18 shows Abraham, because multiple times we read about him going quickly or hurrying. Keep in mind, this is a man who has servants that can do work for him. In fact, this is a man who had 318 soldiers that served under his command when he went out to battle just a couple of weeks ago when we read about that. So he has people that could serve for him, but instead he's taking it upon himself to show this kind of hospitality as a master of his household. And although we know in verse 1 that the Lord appeared to him, when Abraham responds in verse 3, he's using a different word there to say, "my Lord." He's using the equivalent of the term, "sir." In other words, he doesn't seem to recognize at first who has come to visit him. He's just doing what he would do if he welcomed in visitors. And so he goes and he gets a calf, a tender and choice calf, as it's described. This would have been a rare treat for travelers in that area. And yet he's willing to do that to prepare him. And so as we think about the master of the house running and hurrying around and running in to Sarah and saying, "we've got to get this ready." I'm sure there's no husband here that's ever invited somebody over and then come in and said, "hurry up, we've got to cook something, we've got to get something ready." But you can just imagine, use your imagination, thinking about Abraham saying, "we've got to hurry up, we've got visitors." And he stands there as they're eating. It seems that also not only is he preparing it, but he's the host, he's serving them, standing by the tree as they eat. I love what we read in Hebrews 13 and verse 2, where we find the command, "do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it." This seems to be a nod back to this passage, this example. By showing hospitality, some have entertained angels. And it's in this meal that we're going to read a promise reaffirmed once again. God's promise that Abraham is going to have a son is reaffirmed here. It's fascinating to me to think about the role that meals play in the covenant that God has made with His people. Now just think about this for a moment. This is not really, it's not a technical example of a covenant meal like we would see in the Old Testament, or like we'll even see in the New Testament. But in a way, God is renewing His promise over this meal. See, the descendants of Abraham in Exodus 24 are going to have the law of God read to them by Moses. And as Exodus 24 describes, when they agree to obey it, Moses would take the blood of young bulls that were offered and he would sprinkle it on the people, the blood of the covenant. And then Moses would go up with Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and the elders of Israel, go up in the presence of God. And the text says they ate and they drank. It was a covenant meal because the people had said they would obey the law of God. And then, of course, we turn over to the New Testament and we think about the Passover being served as Jesus is there with His apostles. And we remember in Matthew 26 and verse 28, when He takes the cup and He gives thanks and He says, "this is my blood of the covenant." There was another covenant meal. That has an important role in the life of Christians today. It's a vital role to think of coming together and taking the Lord's Supper. And so it's just kind of interesting that here we see a meal. It's not technically a covenant meal, but in a sense, over this meal, God is going to reaffirm this promise to Abraham. And He's doing it over this meal that Abraham has prepared. The Lord visited him. He came to him. What a special, incredible privilege. But not only that, as we continue reading, we see we also serve a God who hears. He's a God who heard and knew what was taking place. Abraham told him that Sarah was in the tent, and then we continue reading in verse 10. He said, "I will surely return to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "after I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "why did Sarah laugh, saying, 'shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old?' Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time I will return to you, at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son." Sarah denied it, however, saying, "I did not laugh," for she was afraid. And he said, "no, but you did laugh." Let's pause right there for just a moment. We find out that Abraham and Sarah serve a God who hears. I wonder what it would have been like the moment when the Lord who's visited Abraham looks at Abraham and asks where Sarah is. He knew Abraham's wife. He knew her name. In fact, it hadn't been too long ago in the text that we've read about Abram and Sarai becoming Abraham and Sarah because of God's pronouncement. And so now this visitor knows Sarah's name. Not only that, but when it's explained that she is in the tent, it likely reflected a cultural custom that she wouldn't be out there with the men as they ate. Still, this visitor that we know is the Lord and that Abraham and Sarah realizes the Lord, he reaffirms this promise and then he says, "Why did Sarah laugh?" Can you imagine what it would have been like to have heard that mentioned over and over again? It's the promise that God gave to Abraham multiple times that they would have a son. And yet, even though they tried to speed things up, and even though Abraham said, "Well, here's Eliezer, who's of my household, surely he can inherit my estate," or now Abraham and Hagar have Ishmael, and now Ishmael is going to be the one. And over again, this promise is reaffirmed. It's easy to understand how Sarah would hear that once again and just have to laugh to herself and just say, "There's no way. This is physically impossible. We know how the laws of the physical world work, and there's no way this could happen. I've heard this promise for years and years, and so there's just no way." And she just sort of laughs to herself. At this age, is this really going to happen? And you could almost see a tinge of bitterness in that laughter. And she realizes that this dream that she might once have had, she doesn't seem to take seriously. And yet God makes this statement. Why did Sarah laugh? And then the follow-up, is anything too difficult for the Lord? You see, there's a reason that this promise wasn't a laughing matter to God. It wasn't the way we usually think of that phrase. We think of laughing about something serious. Well, that's not a laughing matter. Here it wasn't a laughing matter because there is nothing funny or outlandish about God delivering on this promise. He is powerful enough to do it. And it might have seemed just incredibly, just out of the question. There's no way this could happen to Sarah. And she just kind of laughed to herself. But it wasn't a laughing matter because God could accomplish it. And he says, "Wait a minute. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? Why would you laugh at that?" It's a powerful message, isn't it? It's powerful because we see that even in the face of something that we totally would say that's out of the realm of possibility, if God has said He will do it, He will do it. Now, before we're too hard on Sarah, we need to realize just a chapter earlier, in chapter 17, verse 17, Abraham laughed when he was told that. In fact, the text tells us he fell on his face and laughed out loud. At least Sarah was keeping her laughter to herself. Neither of them, when they heard this promise, could really imagine that it would take place. And did you notice that this is a time when God addresses Sarah directly and gives her this promise? We've seen Him give it to Abraham. We've even seen God address Hagar. But here we see the Lord speak to Sarah. I wonder sometimes about the timing here. And I think it reminds us that not only do we serve a God who hears us, but also a God who does the impossible. Sometimes I think we're worried about this idea that God hears us, that God knows our thoughts. I think sometimes we think of that in a negative way. Maybe we think of the all-seeing eye that the song describes as maybe a scene from one of the recent Lord of the Rings movies where you have the evil villain of all three of the films has this kind of big eye that he's looking at everything, and that's the evil eye, and you want to stay away from that. But here, I think we're reminded of the fact that not only did God hear what Sarah was saying, He knew her struggle and was reaffirming, "I'm going to come back here this time next year, and this promise is going to be delivered." I hope that it encourages us to know that God knows our hearts. To know that when someone says something that's hurtful to you, I mean something that cuts deeply, not just joking around, something that really gnaws at you on the inside and you struggle with that, God knows your feelings. God knows what you're struggling with. And when you're wrestling with a temptation and you're working hard to make sure that God's Word is at the center of your life and you overcome a temptation, a thought that was in your mind that shouldn't have been there, and you don't relent, you take that thought captive, God knows when that happens. I think it's encouraging to see that. And a God who does what would be considered impossible, He does it here. He tells Abraham and Sarah that this promise that would just seem outlandish would still be true. Now, we see more than once in the Old and New Testament that God's timing on His promise is a little bit different than man's timing might be. In fact, it's kind of a theme that comes up, that will come up for the children of Abraham and Sarah. Rebekah will have to wait 20 years before Jacob and Esau are born. When we see Jacob go and wants to marry Rachel, but he's tricked by Laban, and so he ends up marrying Leah and Rachel. Leah has 7 children before we read about Joseph being born to Rachel. God's true to His promise, but the timing might be a little bit different. And when His timing was made there, when His promise was made there, it wasn't in the time that Sarah would have expected. At this point, she had probably thought about this and wondered about this and had just given up. And yet this was the time it was going to happen. I wonder sometimes if that isn't a way that God reaffirms when something like this takes place in the Old Testament. God is showing it's truly Him that's in control. I think we might make a comparison to what happens in John chapter 11 when Jesus finds out that Lazarus is ill and waits, instead of going directly to Lazarus, for some time to pass, so that by the time He gets there, Lazarus is already dead and in the grave, and enough time has passed that they know this is not just someone who is seriously ill being resuscitated. This is a resurrection. And so here, they'll know that Isaac being born is truly from God. What can we be reminded of in this passage that we can learn about the God we serve? It's a God who visited Abraham and Sarah, who heard them, who knew their hearts, and who was able to do the impossible. When we think about God coming to Abraham and visiting him, I think we're reminded that we serve a God that doesn't just visit us, but we see in the New Testament a God who dwells with us. That first happens when we read about the Word being made flesh and coming to the earth and living among creation. And then before Jesus is crucified, He promises to His apostles that He will send the Comforter. And when Peter stands up in Acts chapter 2 and he preaches that they'll receive the gift of the Holy Spirit, you'll have not only a God who would be with them, but also a God that would come in and dwell in them. And so we see this presence, this understanding that God is with His people. And it's an amazing contrast to think about the way the Israelites knew that God was with them in the presence of God, the way He would make Himself known as you have that pillar of cloud that led them by day, the fire by night. They built a tabernacle and they could have God's presence there. And then later the temple. And now as we move into the new covenant, we see this gift of the Spirit that's given. And we know that we serve a God who hasn't just visited us, but has come and dwells with His people. And so I don't have to face anything in life on my own. I know that I have a God who is with me. And not only do we serve a God who dwells with us, but a God who hears us, who hears our prayers. How incredible is it that we have the opportunity to communicate with the Creator of everything that we have ever known about and ever seen in our lives? He hears us. He hears our prayers. He also knows us. He knows our thoughts. He knows our struggles. Again, I hope that doesn't make us nervous. I hope that doesn't cause us to worry. I hope that encourages us to see that we don't have a God that's distant, that's far away from us. We have a God that understands what we're going through. And in doing so, cares for us. So we have a God that hears us. And we also have a God who has done what is impossible for us to do. When we think about a God who accomplishes the impossible, we know that God has done what is impossible for us to do. We see that in one sense when we look at the incredible miracles in Scripture. When we see that what's recorded in the Old Testament, what's recorded in the New Testament, God has accomplished those things. I've been interested to keep up with some of the discussion that's taken place as a result of the Bible miniseries that's been on the History Channel, and I've only seen clips of it. But what I have seen are a couple of interviews with the people who created it and then also some ensuing conversations with the people who interviewed them. And the thrust of the interview was, do you believe that those things really happened? Jonah really being swallowed by a fish, did that really take place? Do you believe that some of the things you read about in the Old Testament, those really happened? It was really true. And then some of the reaction when individuals have responded and said, yes, I do believe that's true. And some of the discussion, would that really have happened? Could God really have done that? I think it's fascinating because if I'm willing to say by faith in God that Jesus was raised from the dead, if I believe that God can accomplish that, why would I believe He couldn't do some of these miracles we read about in Scripture? And so when Sarah laughs at the fact that she could have Isaac, I think today people might look through some of the miracles in the Old Testament and New Testament and just kind of laugh. Well, that's really not possible. That really didn't happen. There's got to be something else going on. There's got to be something allegorically that's taking place here. They really didn't expect us to seriously believe this. And yet we serve a God who has done the impossible. And He's done what is impossible for us. There were things that have taken place in the Old Testament and miracles that took place in the early church that I believe as we see the transition of the way God is working. The fact that as Hebrews chapter 1 reminds us, He's communicated to us through His Son. And we have the words of Jesus and those who were inspired to give us God's message. And so some of those miracles that surrounded the confirmation of that aren't necessary anymore. And so in a sense, we might think, well, we don't really live in that age where we see the same kinds of miracles in the New Testament. And I understand that. What I mean when I say God has done what is impossible for us is He's offered us salvation. That's beyond any of our ability to achieve. There's no way that we could do it. If left to our own devices, there's no way we could accomplish it. It's only God who can do that for us, and He's given us that opportunity. The same God who visited Abraham and made a promise that was impossible by human standards but was possible for God is the God who's given us the ability to spend an eternity with Him. You know, it's interesting to read through in the New Testament and to find another birth announcement that's made. When an angel comes to Mary and describes a birth that's going to take place, this birth isn't going to have a human father. It's going to be the Son of God. And Mary is understandably reluctant to trying to figure out exactly what's happening. And the response that she is given is powerful. In Luke chapter 1, Gabriel responds by saying, "Nothing will be impossible with God. Nothing is impossible with Him." And later in Luke chapter 18, Jesus tells His listeners it'll be very difficult for the rich to get into heaven. And He describes how hard it will be for those who had wealth to get into heaven. And they're struggling with understanding that. And well, what's going to happen? And Jesus says, the things that are impossible with people are possible with God. Our salvation is impossible for us, but it's possible for God. And not only is it possible, God has offered it to us. And so that's why we say when we think of this incredible gift that we've been presented with, it's no laughing matter. It might seem outlandish to us, but it's possible for God. Isaac's name meant laughter. It would always be a reminder of not only that one incident, but also the joy that would come from God's promise being fulfilled. And you can have joy tonight in the promise of God. You can leave here joyfully knowing that you'll spend an eternity with Him. If you need to become a Christian, if you need to put Him on in baptism, or if you have any other need, please let us know as we stand and as we sing together.